1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The FBI is offering a $50,000 reward for the safe return of four Americans kidnapped in northern Mexico. CBS's Enrique Acevedo reports.
Details are still scarce about the kidnapping of four American citizens in Matamoros, Mexico, just across the border from Brownsville, Texas. Matamoros is one of the most dangerous places on earth. The organizations that have taken control over the territory have links to human and drug trafficking, and they have immense firepower, the power also to corrupt local officials.
A second person has died after a crowd crush at a rap concert in Rochester, New York last night. Rochester Mayor Malik Evans.
What I saw last night in the aftermath of what happened at this concert breaks my heart, and it is totally unacceptable.
Some said they heard gunshots, but Rochester police say they don't have any evidence of gunshots being fired. At least 35 people are in custody after a protest yesterday at a proposed police and fire training facility in suburban Atlanta turns into chaos. WSB's Michelle Wright.
Authorities say everything was fine until a group of about 100 demonstrators peel off, change into all-black clothing, then launch a coordinated attack against officers, explains Atlanta Police Chief Darren Cheerbaum.
So when you throw commercial-grade fireworks, when you throw Molotov cocktails, large rocks, a number of items at officers, your only intent is to harm.
The upside, explains the chief.
We were very fortunate because of the quick actions of the commanders on scene, no police officers were injured.
Officers were actually able to call in backup and then go arrest nearly three dozen people who will be facing several charges. Michelle Wright for CBS News, Atlanta.
23 people face domestic terrorism charges. California Governor Gavin Newsom says the state is cutting ties with Walgreens in response to the company's decision to not distribute an abortion medication in 20 states. Bert Flickinger with Strategic Resource Group on the possible financial cost to Walgreens.
California business for Walgreens in a given area could be 5 to 10% of Walgreens' total California business, which would make the state of California one of Walgreens' top five customers.
California and Walgreens says it plans to dispense mifepristone in any jurisdiction where it is legally permissible to do so. Senator John Fetterman may be away from the Senate for a few more weeks. CBS's Nicole Killian.
John Fetterman's chief of staff says the Pennsylvania senator will be back to work soon. Adam Gentleson tweeted out new pictures of the lawmaker who was seeking treatment for clinical depression at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. Gentleson says he had a productive meeting with Fetterman, noting he is well on his way to recovery and grateful for well wishes. Fetterman's spokesperson says he's getting briefed daily by staff. Nicole, this is
nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
When you roll a Charmin, I'm just soft on the potty. Let's just also roll it back.
Ultrasoft is irresistibly soft and more absorbent, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
My friend and I are taking a trip to Mexico this year, but neither of us speak Spanish. So we downloaded Babbel and started learning Spanish fast.
Want to start getting conversational in another language in as little as 3 weeks? Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons were designed by language experts to be the most efficient and effective way to learn a new language.
¿Cómo te llamas?
¿Cómo te llamas?
Babbel, language for life. Celebrating 10 million subscriptions sold. Now try Babbel for free at Babbel.com. That's Babbel.com.
Hey, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Overcast skies tonight with the lows around 23. Winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 41. Cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 23. A dusting of snow Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 34.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Been focusing on Republicans doing this little pivot thing it's coming. Trust me, the pivot is coming. They're trying to cast themselves as the workers' party. I don't know if you've been paying attention to this, but they've really been trying to make that, you know, take that family values thing that they don't really buy into and moving it towards, you know, the family party, the parents' party. And that's one that I've heard popped around a couple of times. They're now the parents' party. And it's like all the things that the right has mastered over the years. You know, they're the pro-family party, so you have to be anti. They're the pro-life people, so you have to be against life. You know, go down the list. You know, what they do masterfully, like all their arguments. It's either black or white, right or wrong, good or bad, especially with them being white, right, and good. Life's not that simple, but it's what we're seeing. And what's happening is they're trying to paint this Leave It to Beaver-esque image of the future with interesting, less corporate dominance, less corporate control, and a little bit less fear of socialism. No, they're not going to call it socialism. We'll come up with some cute little name like workfare or, you know, faith-based initiatives. We'll find something. And the reason I bring this up is today over at the New York Times, a conservative think tank, Ethics and Public Policy Center, guy wrote an op-ed. And the op-ed does a nice job of kind of spinning. Doing a little spin toward the parents' party, the family values, working class party of, you know, parents just want, you know, they want good things for their kids. Now, understand, I've been saying for years, we all want the same stuff. We all want good schools for our children. We all want safe neighborhoods. We all want good jobs. We all want health care, education. You go down the list. I think everyone, once you take off the red hat and the blue hat, everyone wants the same thing. Now, they're trying to stake their flag in the ground. And understand, a think tank's been working on how to spin this. And what they're coming out with is, well, you know, the current Republican Party's good at the culture war stuff. But they don't offer any policy solutions. And this is something that I've been saying for years. Republicans hate working people. Look at their policies. They've got nothing. There's no policy aims. This, my friends, the beginning of getting the Republican Party to come up with policies that they can then take, and shame on Democrats for not having already done this. But they're going, look, you know, we're going to reach out to parents because, you know, those evil Democrats, you know, they, you know, the woke, because we're going to hear a lot of woke stuff. You know, they want your children inundated with all of this extreme stuff. And this is one of those moments where the left, they do this to themselves. Democrats do this to themselves. Because the drag show thing is a perfect example. Perfect example. When the Republicans choose to attack drag queens, they don't really care about drag queens. What they care about is the divisive issue. What they want is Democrats and the left to lose their minds and wrap themselves in the rainbow flag and march with all the, you know, all of the pageantry of drag queens and all of the displays of support for the trans community and all this stuff, so that they can go to people who don't care, going, pick a side, black or white, right or wrong, good or bad. And the Democrats and the left do this all the time. They do it to themselves. It comes up, and the first thing they do is they wrap themselves in that rainbow flag, and they go, instead of wrapping themselves in the American flag and saying, look, the reality is I may not agree or like what they do, but I support their right to do it. It's about free expression. It's about life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. We don't do this well. And this is what Republicans have done masterfully. Because they know they're going to be able to go to middle America. They're going to be able to go to that uneducated white working class and go, look, pick a side. Pick a side. You got this over here wrapped in the rainbow flag. You don't want your children doing this. Or us, the good family values people. Now, they don't like either side. They don't, because they know over here the good family values people are crazy and have horrible policies or no policies. But when they give you that binary choice, well, they're hoping that people are going to steer in their direction. Now, you've got this guy going, hey, here's some ways that we move policy to entice these people, because we got them running from the rainbow flag, got them coming. We got to keep them with policy. And he's saying, look, there are five ways that we should be moving pro-family, you know, parent party kind of values. One of them, improving the child tax credit, you know. A little socialism, a little sweetening of the pot to encourage people to have children, because you're going to make people have children. And one of the biggest attacks that I have on the right is, okay, you're pro-birth. What do you do when those kids are born? Well, the think tank here is now coming out and saying, look, little money in the pocket, as long as you have a job. Now, again, if you've listened to this show for a while, you know that I'm against welfare programs. Everything should be a jobs program. Everything should be a jobs program. There should be no handouts. The old adage of you want to eat, you got to work. Because this way you can't divide people. And what I know is the public sector can't, or more likely won't, create enough jobs for everyone. The public sector has to. So everyone has to work. And then earned income tax credit can subsidize to make people have a better life so that they can support their kids and give them opportunities and move forward. And you create this culture of moving forward and up instead of holding down and tearing back. Because it's interesting. One of the things that they talk about in their five master points is promoting strong families, involving fatherhood. And as a kid growing up in the projects back in the 70s, I do remember it was government policy that tore the families apart. It was conservative policies that did that, that said, hey, if you're on ADC, aid to dependent children, like my mother and I, the food stamps of that era, if you're on this, no man in the house. So they were literally breaking up homes. And they used to have inspectors come and check. They used to come and knock on the door and go, well, let's take a look around. And there better not be a sign of a man there. That policy began breaking up families. Again, good God-fearing Christians, you know, they're the ones who did this, because we don't want lazy people doing nothing. He talks about protecting kids online, like they're the only ones who want to protect our children. I don't want pornography available for my kids. I don't want the poison of a lot of the social media available at my children's fingertips. I would be in favor of that. And they understand this. They've done the polling. But here again, comes back to, they keep saying it's about parental rights, but we know what that means. That means culture wars. That means CTE. That means drag shows. That means school choice. At the end of it, it's about destroying public education and putting, well, Education Incorporated in charge of your children's future. And it's also about a little bit of socialism. Going to change the name a little bit, but a little bit of socialism. So you got the tax credits. You got the protecting kids online from predators, and all on board. And I'm on board with the tax credits as well. Supporting new parents. And I don't know what that really means. In my view, supporting new parents could mean, you know, healthcare, making sure that every mother has access to prenatal care all the way through delivery. And then, you know, child care or, you know, healthcare for the kid and the mother through 18, maternity leave, child care. There's a lot that goes in good education systems, opportunities for college. There's a lot of support for parents. They don't really go into that. Just like involving fatherhood. I'm not quite sure what that means either. I assume it's a lot of grievance. And then they go into the tax thing, because every conservative policy always has to come down to a tax thing. More tax cuts, more giveaways. And presumably, you know, they don't really go into who, but grievance, you know, there's a marriage penalty. And I'm going, I don't remember this as big as, it's not that big of a deal. But it's about starving government. So again, there's a lot of the conservative ideology in there, but cloaked in, we're pro-family values. Now, this guy goes into talking about, you know, the difference between high school educated, college educated, and really points a focus on the Democratic base of college educated Democrats, because they're the ones who are opposed to a lot of this stuff. So the argument he's making is going, look, we can take out that base and we can move voters in our direction by doing what Democrats have been wanting to do for a while, which is ensure that there is a way for families to be able to support themselves. Now, me, as a union guy, comes back to, if we had stronger unions, if we had the ability to have a single wage earner to be able to put food on the table, a roof over their heads, opportunities for the future, save for future, you know, whatever, retirement, college, and have one person stay home and raise the children, good family value stuff. If we had the true Leave It to Beaver-esque kind of situation that, fortunately, thanks to my union job, my wife and I are able to give our children, that would be better for society as well. But you're never going to hear the Republicans talk about that. Everything else is some kind of a gimmick. For instance, one of the things that they talk about, you know, paid leave, maternity leave, you know, Romney's Family Security Act, which means that you're going to have to borrow from your Social Security if you take maternity leave. They don't tell you that, because at the end of the day, it's about cheap labor. At the end of the day, it's about getting those people into jobs and keeping people desperate. Now, in his piece, he does hit the right point. He says the Biden administration, and I would say Democrats as a whole, have failed to push through their grand vision for progressive family policy, and has left room for others to act. Because at the end of the day, all people really want, they don't want to know about the red hat or the blue hat. They want to know, are you going to make my life better? And this is where, again, Democrats have dropped the ball. And I'll give you an example. Tucker Carlson was being interviewed by Ben Shapiro. And Shapiro said, the future are automated trucks. These automated trucks are coming. What do you think of automated trucks? Are you in favor of this? And he's like, absolutely not. It's a horrible idea. It should never be allowed to happen. These jobs are, you know, high school educated men take these jobs, millions of them. It is the number one job for high school educated men in this country. It would break the social compact. He actually said that. And you go, wow, oh my God, you know, something that Tucker Carlson and I actually agree on. Now, understand, I've said from the beginning on this issue that I think there should be a technology tax, that we should be making the drivers who are going to lose these jobs whole for the rest of their lives and make it much more expensive to move towards these automated jobs so that the winners don't win immediately and we have time to adjust, that the working class doesn't take it on the chin. Because I know there's no stopping technology. And Tucker Carlson knows this too. The reality is this AI stuff is an overloaded truck going downhill in neutral with no driver. You are not stopping it. He knows it. I know it. The difference is he's going, no, we're going to, I would never allow it. And people are going to go, yeah, he cares about us. He doesn't care about working people. He understands messaging. I'm trying to find a solution. I'm trying to make sure that working people are okay, that they don't take it on the chin again. And this is the difference between what the fake news on the right does and actually getting things done. And Democrats have to figure this out. The same person who sent me the clip of Tucker and Shapiro, you know, asked me why Governor Tom Wolf signed the automation bill here in Pennsylvania. I still don't have an answer for him. Because the reality is this, again, is another moment where Democrats are going to end up taking it on the chin. And Republicans are going to go, see, we were against it. When ultimately, they aren't. Because they know, like everybody else, you're not stopping this monster. Now, if we all came together, red hat, blue hat, and said we want it to stop, we might have a shot. We might have a shot at any change. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I was reminded that 10 years ago today, I was marching in the streets with J-1 visa workers from Asia. Yeah, figure that one out. Evidently, what had happened is you got a bunch of workers that came to this country on J-1 visas, which are meant to be people who come here not to work. A J-1 visa is not a work visa. But it's one that the people come to get the American experience. And what you had were these Asian workers coming for the American experience, working at a McDonald's locally, who were living 8 to 10 in the basement of some shack around the corner and being abused. I mean, working, you know, 20-hour shifts, not being paid overtime, you know, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, we went and protested the treatment of these workers. And I said at the time, I go, what these workers did is, and the argument of I would make if I were the McDonald's owner is that I'm giving them the ultimate cultural experience of a low-waged worker in America. Exploitable, desperate, abusable. And, you know, it obviously did not go well. But at the time, they ended up firing them. There was a whole bunch of ugliness that went around this. And eventually there was some push to get the J1 stuff stopped. But we're moving in another direction, because every time corporate America needs some cheap labor, they figure out a way around the rules. So what are they doing now? You look at that child labor bill in Iowa. Ohio has just passed out of a Senate committee, a child labor bill with bipartisan support, weakening child labor laws. You look at Sarah Huckabee Sanders in Arkansas. They're about to make a system where if you're 9 years old, you don't even need to get a work permit. Let that sink in for a minute. We're moving in a direction where, well, if you're desperate enough, hungry enough to work in poverty conditions for desperation wages, hey, it's your freedom. It's your choice. Scary stuff. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
I'm doing better. How about you?
I won't complain. What's on your mind?
Okay, so what I wanted to say is, for some odd reason, it seems that the Republican Party and Putin and his gang seem to be going hand in hand and passing similar laws. And it's just, it's the same old thing, just a different century.
Yeah.
You know, this is the same thing that Germany did. If you look, and it all goes back to forcing their so-called religious values on the rest of us. It's just the same old playbook over and over. And they come off with wonderful ways of explaining it. Then everybody goes, oh, great, that sounds wonderful. Until it doesn't once it's passed.
Yeah.
So, you know, the very people that need to learn from history, who are little snowflakes and cry, oh, my God, it hurt our feelings, are the ones that need to learn about history. But you have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate the thoughts. No, I mean, you think of their language. It is focus group tested, think tank approved, because they spend a lot of time and energy on messaging. They understand the power of radio and TV and messaging and social media. They understand. They understand fear. And that's where they live. They live in scaring the you-know-what out of people because, hey, those drag queens are coming for you. But you stop and you think about it. Over the last 40 years, it's been conservative ideology and conservative policies that have caused the breakdown of the family, that have caused the standard of living in this country to stagnate and to actually go backwards. It's their policies that harm the working class, and yet, because of these culture issues, you know, again, we're blinded. You know, Thomas Frank's, you know, what's the matter with Kansas? They found, you know, people, you know, felt helpless in dealing with the economic stuff. But the stuff that they could control, that's what they grabbed onto. And this is the same thing. This is the argument that these folks have been making. And what's frustrating and angering is the policy mechanisms that are happening. And I say, look, you know, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. And I look at this child labor push. Multiple states simultaneously running child labor bills to break down the number of hours kids can work, to break down how late they can work, to break down the kinds of jobs they can do. Why? Because corporate America needs cheap labor. And it's really...
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
If you're talking to me, we'll hear you. We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get.
That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So talk, they hear you. You can do it if you try.
It was a normal day.
He was in some minor accident, a fender bender.
And I had this impulse to call him, but I didn't, because I thought I could call him later that week.
He abandoned the car, he came home, and he shot himself without ever talking to anyone.
When I came home that night and I found her, they told me that she had shot herself, and I couldn't believe it. I asked if he was okay.
Taking a gun into your house for protection is a terrible myth.
Once you pull that trigger, that's it. There is no coming back.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Store your gun securely, locked, unloaded, and away from ammunition. Help stop suicide. Learn more at infamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
I'm a wife and the mother of two kids. And when I get to work in the precinct house and put on my uniform, I can tell you, as a police officer, we're building partnerships. This should be happening everywhere, so the police should be reaching out to this community, and this community should reach out to the police. That's the way to make this a safer place.
Start the conversation and help stop crime. To learn the five things you can do, go to ncpc.org/preventviolentcrime. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance.
If you're worried your friend may be struggling, remember, you don't have to be there to be there.
You can say how while you will get a fake tattoo. You can ask with an app if it works for you. You could write him a text or knit him a sweater. If you can't be together, you could write him a letter.
Whatever gets you talking. Whatever gets you talking.
You could chat on the game, kick off your flip-flops. You can ask on your couch while you binge watch. However you do it, you gotta ask a friend. And if they don't share, you can ask again.
Whatever gets you talking. Whatever gets you talking.
Reach out to a friend about their mental health. Learn how you can help at seizetheawkward.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Overcast skies tonight with lows around 23. Winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 41. Cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 23. A dusting of snow Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 34.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM. OTE. Call or text today, 866-ID-2-VOTE.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more, weekday mornings from 6 to 8, all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's about protecting freedom. The clothing mandate, she explained, eliminates the possibility that the state will be the clothing police. This is Jim Hightower saying, I'm thinking of moving to Missouri. It must be wonderful to live in a state where the government has already fixed all the big problems people really care about, letting the legislative body focus on properly clothing its women members.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, some hopeful news. this is one of those things where I have some hope that there is the possibility. And I know maybe I'm just being too optimistic, but there are opportunities for our political system to work to make people's lives better. And this is a small thing, but it is kind of a step forward that we can agree maybe that maybe children shouldn't go hungry at school. That's why I've asked my next guest to come share some thoughts. When we did our Working Class Heroes tour, we ran into Sammy Sheets running for State House in Iowa. And, you know, again, talking about working class values, and I'm thrilled to see that he has proposed his first piece of legislation to eliminate a two-tier system differentiating between free and reduced meals to make sure that kids get fed. Personally, I would like to see lunch free for all kids, but that's never going to happen. But that's why I've asked my good friend Sammy Sheets to come share some thoughts. Sammy, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So walk me through this legislation that you've got. What are you working on? I see you, it's a bipartisan piece of legislation, which gives me hope that some of our Republican friends do have a soul. Walk me through it.
Yeah, so basically in Iowa, we have right now two-tiered system for free and reduced lunch. So if you make up to 130% of the poverty line, your family does, family of four, the state pays for, and USDA sets this limit, pays for your lunch. So you don't have to pay to go to breakfast and lunch at school. If you make up to 185%, which is a family that in Iowa makes around $65,000 a year, family of four, you do have to pay. But during the pandemic, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the federal government paid for everybody's lunch. And to your points in the opening comments, I would love to see a universal free school lunch program. But what I did this year is, given the fact that Democrats are in the minority in our legislature, I tried to see how many steps forward could I take and get Republicans on board. So my bill, House File 575 in the Iowa legislature, does is it eliminates that two-tiered system. So if you're any family that makes 180% of the poverty line, which like I said is around $64,000 a year for a family of four, your lunch is paid for. So you don't have to, as of last month, the federal government stopped paying and stopped doing universal free lunch through the ARPA funds. And so these kids would have had to start going back and paying for school lunch again, which is wrong. Like I said, everybody should have free school lunch. But what I was really happy about, Rick, is that through tons and tons of conversations with Republican colleagues, I was able to get 20 Republicans to co-sponsor my bill, and that is almost unheard of. They don't let people like me get wins, and from what I know, a bunch of the Republicans that did sign on were chastised by their leadership for agreeing to this piece of legislation. But for $1 million, you know, this, we talked about this last time I was on, Republicans just passed a $1 billion school voucher bill. So this is $1 million a year to make sure that 26,000 kids in Iowa that currently have to pay for lunch would not have to pay for lunch. So this is a no-brainer to me, and I'm really, really excited that it had bipartisan support.
Now, this is good. I mean, it's a good first step, you know, because the sad thing is you see these stories, you know, all over the place, you know, where kids are having their lunches taken from them because they have an outstanding balance. And, you know, I've got a listener who, you know, constantly reminds me that the amount of debt that kids have on these school lunch programs is just outrageous. And it shouldn't be this way, because ultimately, and I'm sure you've done the research having proposed this legislation, we know that if kids are hungry, they're not learning. The research is there's no gray area. If kids get breakfast and lunch, they're going to do so much better. So it seems like an investment for the future instead of going, well, sorry, you can't pay, so you get nothing. It's insane what we do to poor people.
Absolutely. Yep. And I try not to just think of, you know, the economic argument, but you're right that it's going to produce kids that are actually learning in our schools. I think that kids just shouldn't go hungry in the state of Iowa. They should have their breakfast and lunch paid for. I think every kid should. But what this will do is, at least for a lot of working class families that qualify, that make 180% of the poverty level, or around $64,000 a year in Iowa, that's going to provide stability and economic security for those families. And that's a small step, like I said. And like you said, this is not the end goal. But I have to work with the political realities that I have in the legislature. So to try and get something, I mean, you can do the simple math. We got 36 Democrats, 50 or 20 Republicans signed on. That's 56 votes. It will pass if it gets a vote in the Iowa House. And that's 26,000 families that are going to be impacted by this legislation. It's not a end-all final step, but I think it's a damn good first step.
You said if.
Sorry?
You said if.
I did say if. Yep, because I'm not sure it's going to get a vote. The Republican leadership has to decide whether it gets a vote or not. And as of now, it has not been scheduled for a committee hearing or a vote. And it could very well be dead. I don't know. That's not my decision.
Well, how cruel.
What comes up for a vote or not.
How cruel. And again, I say the cruelty is always the point. But how cruel.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And I thought, you know, getting 20 Republicans on board, which, like I said, almost never happens for any piece of legislation, would force their leadership to bring it to a vote. But I haven't seen it yet today. So...
yeah, my mind tends towards the economic, because if you're going to argue to Republicans, you've got to make the economic benefits.
Yep.
You know, the cost-benefit analysis is going to cost us, you know, less down the road, you know, in remediation and you know, prison costs and you name it. So then maybe they go, oh, you know, what was that ounce of prevention, pound of cure thing? You remember that guy who said that a long time ago? You may remember him, had a flag with a key on it, a kite with a key on it. Remember him? Yeah. But, you know, there's also the moral argument that I make having lived through going through this, because I remember as a kid having to go to the free lunch line, and it wasn't the lunch line that everyone else got to go through. So there was that stigma that came along with, oh, you're the poor kid. And that's another one of these things that should be taken out of the school system. Look, there's enough that kids have to deal with going to school and dealing with peer pressure. This shouldn't be one of them.
I agree, and that's why the end goal needs to be universal free school lunch. This has to be a program that, you know, like our public education system in general, does not discriminate based on, you know, what economic class your family's in. And so... our school lunch system in Iowa needs to do the same exact thing, not separate kids based on the amount of money that their parents have. And so, like I said, this is the first step. God willing, down the road, we'll be able to pass universal preschool lunch like kids in Iowa and across the country have had over the past couple of years of the pandemic.
Yeah. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. It's Iowa State Representative Sammy Sheets talking about his piece of legislation to make sure that your kids get fed at school. This is not a difficult one. This is a no-brainer. You said a second ago that because of the ARPA money, that lunch had been paid for the last, you know, 2 years, that it's now gone. End of the last month, beginning of this month, it went, as did the SNAP benefits. We've now hit a SNAP cliff, if you will, and families are going to get, you know, less money to put food on the table. Are you guys talking about, you know, how you're going to either make that up or deal with what's coming? Because the next couple of months, hunger is going to go up. I know we love to call it food insecurity, but hunger is going to go up. Poverty numbers are going to go up. Childhood poverty numbers are going to go up. Are you guys dealing with that? I know you had your SNAP thing going on, which was horrible. But is there any talk on how to help with that? Or is it just continue to make it worse?
Yeah, I mean, I wish, I'm not in the federal government, I wish our federal government in Washington, D.C. made the child benefits.
No, I get you're not in the federal government, Sammy.
Yeah, no,
this falls on the states. You know, the SNAP money goes from the federal government to states. The states use it. Now there's a hole in your budgets. Now you don't have the money. Your state is going to end up having more hungry people. Is the state considering how they're going to deal with the shortfall? Some states are going to make up the difference. How is your state going to deal with this?
Well, the Republicans are planning to use, we have a couple $1 billion surplus in our state budget, and the Republicans' plan with that money is to eliminate the state income tax in the next couple of years here, which will cost literally billions of dollars in revenue. They plan on increasing the sales tax to make up for that shortfall in revenue, the most regressive form of taxation that we have, because obviously, why not beat down on working class people more and end our progressive taxation system that we've had in the state for decades. That's a huge plan. And instead of, you know, a colleague of mine had an excellent post on social media the other day about all the things our state house Republicans have done to fight inflation and help working people. And the tweet was blank, obviously, because they haven't done anything, Rick, to help working people. They have spent the vast majority of their time, like you mentioned, cutting benefits for some of the most vulnerable Iowans that are on SNAP benefits. They've spent time attacking the most vulnerable kids in our state. Those are the transgender community, passing bathroom bills, following Florida with banning gender-affirming care in this state. We were here up at the Capitol till 2 a.m. debating those bills last week, and unfortunately they passed. So they're not giving a damn about working people. They're hell-bent on, you know, fighting their culture wars. And when they do actually talk about economic issues, like always, it's in the interests of the wealthy and corporations. They didn't have any problem last year spending $300 million on a tax cut for some of the wealthiest Iowans and corporations, instead of giving, you know, working people who had just gone through a pandemic and record high inflation a break. They said the wealthy need a break and corporations need a break. That's the kind of leadership we're getting from Republicans in our state legislature.
Yeah. Now, they do have an inflation plan that I've kind of noticed, an inflation plan that's kind of becoming apparent in Republican circles. It's putting children to work. That's how they're going to help families deal with inflation. You know, more people out in the workforce. Get those kids competing with mom and dad for those jobs. You know, get rid of that union janitor and get those kids to clean those toilets like Newt Gingrich wanted a couple years ago. That seems to be, because your state's not the only one. I mean, you've got a really bad bill, as you know better than anyone. But Ohio's doing it. I guess Tennessee's doing it. Arkansas is about ready to pass a bill. They've passed it. I guess Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I guess, is about to sign a bill that would do away with work permits for kids as young as 9 years old. I mean, it's crazy, but it seems like it's a concerted effort because we need cheap labor, Sammy.
Yeah, I mean, it's disgusting. We had a great rally here with organized labor and the labor movement and a lot of just working folks that showed up to the Capitol last week. We had great turnout. A couple hundred people came. Say that our kids are not for sale in the state of Iowa. Just because you're not willing to pay net the wages that'll attract people to the state and actually have a real workforce, you resort to bringing kids back to coal mines and meatpacking plants. It's disgusting. It's horrible and it's wrong. And they're not willing to address the core problems that are creating our workforce shortage in this state. The bills that I just mentioned, if you want to talk about even the Economic Alliance or the Chambers of Commerce in the state are saying that the legislation they're proposing to hate on transgender and LGBTQ plus kids in this state is impacting workforce development and our ability to attract workers to the state of Iowa. So instead of paying a living wage for workers, instead of supporting some of the most marginalized kids in our state, they've decided that the solution is to bring 14-year-olds back into the workforce, some of the most dangerous jobs that we have in the state. I mean, it's literally like Upton Sinclair 100 years ago would be turning in his grave looking at the legislation in 2023 that states, not just Iowa, but Iowa, are trying to pass to bring kids out of the classrooms and into the workforce.
But, you know, the thing is, I keep coming back to, why don't we hear more of this? Why aren't we hearing more? You know, why isn't Fox News talking about how much they love the children? Oh, that's right. They don't care.
No. You know, what I'm really grateful for is our Labor Secretary, Marty Walsh. I know he's on his way out, but he was finally sounding the alarm on national news last week, talking about Iowa, talking about how terrible these bills are for workers and for kids. This is not, I mean, you know this. This is not the first step. They already gutted collective bargaining in Iowa and in a bunch of these states that you're talking about. And when the results of weakening labor laws and making it really hard to protect workers leads to a shortage in workers in the state, their solution is to just use more draconian laws. And it's not a solution to the huge problem that we're facing in this state. But unfortunately, Republicans are hell-bent on pursuing these really, really terrible, dangerous policies.
We are most certainly in dangerous times. Just crazy stuff. And the thing is, you know, I remember it wasn't too long ago. Tom Harkin was your senator, a great salt of the earth guy. I always thought Iowa was a solid Democratic, moderate Democratic state with you know, good solid working class values that would look at a bill like yours and go, well, of course we feed the children because ultimately we make the food. It seems to me you guys make all the food. It would be simple and wouldn't be very costly. You could probably source it all locally. You could probably have the best lunch program in the entire world sourced locally. You know, farm to table, could be an education program, but no.
I mean, think about, we've talked on your program before about, and I know you had J.D. Schultz on, talk about this horrible SNAP bill. They've amended it, but the original version of their bill that 40 of them signed on to, 40 House Republicans, would have banned Iowans on SNAP benefits from consuming fresh meat and American cheese. Think about the state that we're in, how important agriculture is to our economy, and the Republicans were going to ban Iowans from consuming our meat and our dairy products. It's insane.
Well, no, it's not. Not when you think about it with the frame that I do. The cruelty is the point. It's simply the cruelty is the point, and I'm not shocked by it at all. Last question I've got, how can we help you get this across the board? How can we help you get a vote on this? I mean, to me, this is the simplest thing. How do we get a vote?
We got to pressure the Speaker of the House, who's Pat Grassley, the grandson of U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, who's the leader of the Republicans in the Iowa House. It's his decision. I'm having as many constituents across the state trying to contact him, put pressure on him to give this a vote. Because like I said, if this gets a vote, this has 36 Democrats and 20 Republicans. That's 56. I was never great at math, but that legislation would pass and 26,000 kids in the state of Iowa would be able to have free lunch. And so for any of your listeners that are in Iowa, or they don't even have to be in Iowa, you can contact the Speaker's office. All his contact information is on our legislative website. Please tell Pat Grassley to give this a vote.
We will most certainly get that out there and get people on social media to reach out and yell early and often. But, Sammy, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. I'll look forward to having you back again real soon.
Thank you so much, Rick. You have a good night.
You too. Good stuff, Sammy Sheets, Iowa State Representative. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1857. That was the day the U.S. Supreme Court handed down one of its most infamous decisions. It was known as the Dred Scott case. Dred Scott had been born into slavery. He was owned by a military man named John Emerson. His military service brought Emerson from the slave state of Missouri to the free state of Illinois and then the free territory of Wisconsin. While in Wisconsin, Scott married. Emerson's career path then turned back to Missouri. A few years later, Emerson died. Scott attempted to purchase freedom for himself and his wife. When he was not successful, he took his case to the courts, claiming that his time on free soil should have granted him freedom. The Supreme Court decision was devastating for Dred Scott and for all who opposed slavery. In a 7-2 decision, the court ruled that as a black man, Scott had no claim on citizenship under the U.S. Constitution. The majority opinion left no ambiguity, saying Scott, quote, had no rights which the white man was bound to respect. But the court went even further. It ruled that the Missouri Compromise of 1820 was unconstitutional. This meant that, according to the court, Congress could not move to prohibit slavery in any U.S. territories. Reaction in the North by those who supported free labor was swift and angry. The Chicago Daily Tribune declared, "It is the first step in a revolution which, if not arrested, nullifies the Revolution of 76 breaks and makes us all slaves again. The Dred Scott decision sharpened tensions over the question of slavery and marched the nation closer to civil war. Today's Labor History in Two brought to you in memory of Carol Hillman, a passionate friend of workers and volunteer of the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, I always get a kick out of Republican plans. And again, as I said a moment ago, they do have an inflation plan. Republicans do have an inflation plan, and that's to get people to work more. You should be working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And if you and your wife can't make it, well, get those children out there. Start pumping out kids. We're literally going back 100 years. We're literally going back into the ages where you had kids just so you could work the farm. Now it's just to put food on the table and a roof over the head. This is craziness. And all of their plans, all of their schemes, all of the things they come out with designed to make the wealthy wealthier, the rich and powerful richer and power more powerful, and the working class more desperate and, well, on the, like a hamster on the wheel. You never get off until you croak. And I look at this sales tax scheme. Again, this keeps popping up in a lot of places. You know, if you remember, you know, Kevin McCarthy's health care plan, it's all about the sales tax. You remember we're going to get rid of, you know, we're going to get rid of stuff. That's Social Security. We're going to get rid of this stuff. And we're going to bring in a national and income tax. We're going to do away with the IRS. We're going to bring in a sales tax. Again, we know who this hurts. But what they do is they, and masterfully, again, this is masterful. They play on a sense of fairness that we should all pay the same rate. Whether you make $1 million a year or you make two, should all pay the same rate. And you go, but hold on, if you're making $1 million a year, I don't know, 30% of $1 million is a lot of money, but not really going to affect your ability to put food on the table as it would someone making 10 grand a year. But that's not the point, is it? Point is to starve the federal government. Grover Norquist, I want to make the government so small we can drag it in the bathtub and drown it. And then we want desperate workers. People who are going to show up to the job day after day after day and not participate in the wealth that these companies make. And what was interesting is, you know, the president talked about manufacturing over the weekend, put out a tweet about manufacturing jobs and how, you know, we need to help mom and pop, you know, small businesses on Main Street. And I said, you know, one of the best ways we can help mom and pop on Main Street is make sure that we unionize big employers. We make sure that workers have the ability to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, conditions. Nothing helps mom and pop on Main Street more than a working class that has disposable income. Nothing. There's nothing you can do for mom and pop on Main Street that's going to make it easier for them to survive than to have workers with disposable income. And how do you do that? Well, higher wages. And how do you do that? Collectively bargaining. Because these companies don't, out of the goodness of their heart and their benevolence, give people raises. And that's been shown over the last 40 years as labor's power has been diminishing. As union density has been falling, guess what has been falling as well? Your wages. You know, I was at the gym today talking to a guy, and we just happened to strike up this conversation about, you know, the destruction of families. And
what I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad.
All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting.